Great day, everyone. Rhonda Y. Williams here with your pre-Coffee with Rhonda Show espresso shot. So telling doesn't teach, nor does it change behavior or culture. So today, there's so many terms that we use to describe the type of leaders that we want to see in our workplaces. We've got authentic leadership, relational leadership. We've got servant leadership, agile leadership, sustainable leadership, and inclusive leadership. But saying it doesn't make it so. So we have to figure out how to get there. So to achieve a culture where these terms are more than just buzzwords, it is going to take the entire leadership team to have an intentional effort where everyone is on board. We need a strategic approach to actually making it happen. So otherwise, talk is cheap. So on episode 104 of the Coffee with Rhonda Show, we're going to take a journey into what it takes to really build that inclusive culture where we are moving from me to we. Let's get ready to lead above the grind. Great day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. We are so excited to be here with you today. We are your cup full of inspiration, revelation, and wit for today's savvy leader. And we are excited to be in season 9, and this is episode 104. So before we introduce our co-host and our special guest for today, let's do our little bit of housekeeping. So if you have not already subscribed, we'd love for you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can do that really easily at coffeewithrhondashow.com. I'd also like you to stop right now. Take a moment to like and share this video, because I promise you, there is something in our conversation today that others will want to hear. So with all of that being said, my name is Rhonda Y. Williams, and I'm your host for the show. And I am a former chief nursing officer and hospital CEO. And as such, I've had my share of stress, right? So given all of that, I believe today we must modernize our approach to leadership to include ongoing growth and development and overall well-being for ourselves and others. So the work that I do today is at Above the Grind Leadership, where we help move organizations forward, and we help them systematize culture so that they can maximize their profits. So you want to learn more about the work that I do in the world, you can visit atgleadership.com. So with that being said, today I have my cup, and my cup says, I'm crabby till I get my coffee. So that's my cup today. That's what I'm going with. And in my cup, I just have regular old coffee, although it is Starbucks French roast. All right. That's what I've got going on. So that's me. And let's introduce our co-host for today. And Ms. Roz Jones, how are you? Great to see you, darling.
I'm good. How are you?
Doing amazing and fantastic.
Well, I'm here. Last week I had a slight little fender bender, you know, was doing all that raining down here. And so everything is okay. The side mirror, you know, it didn't take them long to replace it. But all is well. I'm good. I'm here in Jacksonville, the CEO and owner of Jacksonville's Best Caregivers, where we help expand the life of your loved one. How do we do it? Why do we do it? Well, let me say that, because I want to reduce the stress of the caregivers, which is that SOS, which is being stressed, overwhelmed, and providing safety and security. When you can't do it all, give us a call. I have sweet orange tea with lemon and honey. And I want to know where you got that quote from that says, if you don't talk to Rhonda, you're in trouble. The one.
Did you catch that in the opening Broadway?
That's why I was laughing when we came in. Okay. And now hang on to your butts as Rhonda.
Hang on to your butts, people.
Ooh, it's becoming very serious now.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, Roz. Good to see you and glad that everything is okay. Yeah. Marae.
Hello, 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 everyone. This is Marae, all the way from Perth, Australia, the Greatness Engineer with you today. I am an engineer by background, a petroleum engineer, and I spend, you know, I spent the last few years, you know, helping women being visible in male-dominated environment and help them to step into their greatness and take their position at the executive level. And today I'm drinking some ginger and honey in my cup, so all good.
Awesome. Thank you, Marae. Always good to see you. And today, so I want to welcome our special guest to the show, Lee Scholl. We met online on LinkedIn, which is where it feels like I spend all of my time these days. So we had a conversation. And Lee, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and tell us one of the things I would like for you to share with us in your introduction is you made this pivot from business and IT into inclusive leadership and personal development. Tell us a little bit about, give us the short version of that journey for you as you introduce yourself. And then also don't forget to tell us what you have in your cup.
Alrighty, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been great meeting you over the last few weeks. So my name is Lee Scholl. I'm from Sandy Hook, Connecticut. That Sandy Hook, Connecticut that you know, we know and have heard about. And that is part of my journey. I did leave corporate America a little over 2 years ago. And that was only part of the journey that started the morning of the shooting here, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. And it actually started in my neighborhood. Long story short, I was activated, motivated to try to do something because the shooter lived in my neighborhood. And when I learned that, a camera and a microphone came up in front of me. And I thought, you know, I have an opportunity here to try to get a message out. And when they asked what I was thinking was, we as a society are partially responsible for what happened here. You know, not to take away fault or blame for, you know, allowing access to that firearm, but the fact that somebody could be that distraught, that much in crisis to create such violence doesn't just happen on its own, right? Something fell through the cracks. And that started my journey. I didn't know what was going to come of my actions, but ended up co-founding Sandy Hook Promise, a national nonprofit that is still very successful today. And alongside my paid work, I continued, you know, with that organization for almost a year, and then left. And I started, what affected me most in that journey were people's stories. It wasn't the statistics about gun violence, but people's stories that really resonated with me and humanized the human toll. Part of that journey was accompanying a mother of one of the victims to a church in North Hartford, which is predominantly Black. Newtown is predominantly white. And after she got done speaking, I heard there was 8 to 10 mothers that got up to the microphone. And while they empathized with this mother who lost her child and our community here in Newtown, there was anger and pain in their voices about how their children are dying every day on the streets. And we never hear about them. We only hear about the most sensationalized violence in our country or in our world today, because there just seems to be so much of it. So that stuck with me. And then there were certain waypoints along the way as I was doing my research and understanding and trying to, what I wanted to do is share people's stories to show the scope, scale, and impact of violence to each of us in the hopes that people would act, right? And as part of that, I wanted people to move from me, a self-centered me mentality, to we, right? The collective and community, because we're wired in our brains and our being evolutionary to be collaborative, to be in community with each other. And so that kind of brought me along this, you know, journey, and then certain waypoints along the way, like the 2016 election here in the US and the hate and bigotry, the 1619 project was a big eye opener for me, Nicole Hannah Jones, New York Times Magazine. And, you know, even prior to those things, I, you know, aside from, you know, suicide with a gun, when I looked at gun violence, I was trying to understand what the root causes were. That's just kind of my, in my background, as a consultant in the IT space, and just, I think, my general nature. And what I came to think of it was, you know, hopelessness, poverty, the cycle where a lot of the other gun violence happens. It's, you know, I can't say that if I were born in the zip code with those parents that I wouldn't have ended up the same way. So, but what's the root causes for that, right? So then along, as I mentioned, these other waypoints, my eyes really kind of became open to, you know, I'm kind of embarrassed to admit it, right? But we're not educated really on the how this country came about, and, you know, on the back of Indigenous and Black people, is what, you know, this country was built on, basically. So that has just motivated me. When I quit my job, it was I kind of realized afterwards how toxic it was, but I left because of health reasons. Then I decided, with the help of my mother paying forward some, you know, pre-planned a little bit of inheritance, to allow me to make the shift into what I'm passionate about. And that really is helping our society become more just and peaceful. That's a very long intro. I know you asked for a short one, but in a short way. And I am drinking coffee this morning from, this is D&I Strategist. This is a woman owned, Black woman owned D&I company based in Atlanta, Maryland, Christina Smith. And I've been working with her. This is part of my journey too. I met her in a course of personal justice, workshop for racial justice, personal work put on by the Pauli Murray Center. So,
yeah, thank you so much, Lee. It was a long opening, but I think it's important for us, right? That context and why you're here, and the fact that such a major and significant event happened, and you were right there, right? To have the Sandy Hook shooter be from your neighborhood and to just be in the middle of that, I would think would, excuse me, cause anybody to sort of pivot and transition where they are in their life. So a couple of things I want to do. So there's a few people out there saying good morning before we get started. Christopher Andrade, good morning to you. He said, safe and savvy, Roz. So it's great to see you out there this morning, Christopher. And don't forget, if you're out there, don't forget to tell us where you're watching from and what's in your cup. Mom's out there. Hey, Mom, good morning. Chilly morning here with a large cup of mint herbal tea with lemons. Excited for another great show. Welcome back, Roz. Mom always misses Roz when she's not there. And Jess Page says it's paused. I'm not sure what that means. Hopefully the video is restarted for you. Dia says that's wonderful. And keep up the great work, Dr. Murray Tulakima. And Michelle says, great and important topic. Thank you so much for tuning in, Michelle. And Dee Johnson says, true words, Lee. Thank you for those and your intro. All right. So again, if you're out there, say good morning. Tell us where you're watching from. Nate says, I'm watching from Cleveland with pumpkin coffee. All right. Now I'm jealous, Nate, because I just got boring old coffee in my cup and you've got pumpkin. I love pumpkin flavored coffee.
Let's get started. Huh? Love Cleveland. Used to live in Cleveland after we got married.
Nice. Okay. So we got a Cleveland connection. So Lee, every guest I ask to start with an opening quote, and I say, send us a quote that resonates with you that's connected to our topic. And then I want you to tell us why this quote why this is powerful, why this quote is important and matters to you. So I'll share your opening quote. I'll read that for those on audio, and then I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about what this quote means for you. All right, for those of you watching or listening later on audio only, the quote says, one person can make a difference and everyone should try. And this quote is held by JFK and noted by his wife, Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy. So Lee, tell us about why this quote for you.
This quote, I guess it was less than 2 weeks after the shooting. It was a whirlwind afterwards, as I mentioned, in the lead up to forming Sandy Hook Promise and a trip to DC, you know, a 24-hour trip to DC. And we got away just to get out of town because it was 16, 18-hour days, 7 days a week with the family. And we were at this yoga retreat in the Berkshires. We didn't attend any yoga sessions, but we just went. It was a peaceful place that my wife had enjoyed. And we were in the gift shop, and there was this magnet, which I have up behind me. And it just, based on everything we had gone through, there was a lot of doubt in my mind about what I was doing, because I wasn't really thinking about what I was doing. It was just, I was just kind of going from my heart. And it just spoke to me. One person can make a difference and everyone should try was kind of a very affirming, a validating quote for me in that moment. And, you know, I've come to think about it over my journey. You know, I keep that quote, you know, near and dear. It's in the back of my mind almost always that, you know, because when we doubt ourselves, right, well, what can I do? Right. But we can make a difference. And the more I thought about it, you know, this, the concept of me to we, when I kind of formed this action plan of moving people to action, you know, I often use this metaphor of a drop of water in a puddle, right? And you get the concentric rings outward from that. And I thought, okay, what if I can be that drop of water, and I can, you know, if I'm doing good in the world, if I'm helping people, I can convey those feelings and sentiments to my family and my friends, and those concentric rings outward, my social circles, my community. The more people, the more drops of water in that puddle that are doing good, eventually in that puddle of water, you're going to get those concentric rings overlapping. And I think that's where we're going to have a more just and peaceful society. So that's what my main, you know, thrust is to try to get people to believe that they can make a difference. And we can, as small as it is, even if we ourselves just stop causing harm or do something to put a break on the system of oppression in our country, then you're doing something.
I love that. Absolutely. And I want to ask Murray and Roz about that, because that quote, when you're talking about one person can make a difference and everyone should try, there's so much happening in our world, so much that we're passionate about, but it can feel heavy. Right? It can feel a little bit overwhelming, like there's no way that I can do this. So Roz and Murray, I want to get your response to that quote in just a second here. Let me read a couple of comments out there. Pat's out there. Hey, Pat, thanks so much for joining and tuning in. Pat says, I love it. And Christopher says, I have a Jeroboam of Pete's Supreme Black. And it's Pete's. And then also said such a profound quote. Now more than ever. Absolutely, Christopher, I agree. So, Murray, let's start with you. When you hear this quote that we should all try to make a difference, how does that land and resonate with you? And, you know, are there times where you feel overwhelmed like I can't possibly?
Yeah, I think there's always, you know, when especially when you look at what's happening right now, you start to ask yourself, where do I start? And am I really going to make a difference? And I always go back to this quote, and I'm going to read it here, is, you know, if you think you are too small to have an impact, try going to bed with a mosquito in the room. And you see, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, we're not too small. There's always something we can do. It might not have, you know, an impact straight away, but if we keep, you know, doing the great things and really add this up, it's, you know, there's going to have a rippling effect. And I think, you know, by doing something, we also, you know, inspire people to follow. And that's how, you know, you create this big impact that we're really looking forward. And sometimes it's just about, you know, being the, you know, the person to start the process. And even if it's a little, it's little, just keep going, you know, just make a small impact, and then people will just follow, and it will at the end, you know, be something big. Look at just this show, you know, how we started, you know, it's just, you know, crazy. We started really small, and now, you know, we have, you know, people watching for all over the world, and we are making a difference, you know, in people's life, even if, you know, we're not saying it every day, but it makes a huge difference for people, especially in terms of leadership and understanding that we have to be the leader that we're looking for.
I love that. And what a good way to end that. You said so much really powerful there. But Roz, let me come to you and ask you about your thoughts on the quote and how you feel about that.
When I heard the quote, it made me think about if we're consistent at what we're doing, what type of impact we will have. And going back to what Mariah say about the show, we've been consistent. You know, even when we've had our glitches or whatever, people understand that we're not perfect, but we're giving them good information. And in each one of our businesses, you know, Lee, Rhonda, myself, Mariah, we're all consistent in our business. And it's because we've been consistent, we've been able to make impacts that not only touch us, but the people who we come in contact with, because we're so consistent. That's where Lee says, you know, when that pebble hits that water, that's when the ripple effects come over each other, because we have impacted someone and someone says, well, I know Mariah can do this. I know Rhonda can do this. I know Lee. So it comes back to us. Eventually what we do comes back to us.
Thank you, Rod. Yeah, I love that. And really a powerful way, I think, to start this conversation. I was telling Lee before the show that I never know where this conversation is going. And it's one of the fun and exciting things about the show. It can also be a little scary, right? Because I don't really know where it's going. But, you know, and I do like a bit of control. And on the show, I feel like I don't have a lot of it. But I love sort of some of these conversations and the way they dive in. And Lee, one of the things I was thinking of as you were speaking about that drop, I'll speak to my own thoughts, because Murray talked about us each in our businesses. I am building a global leadership organization, right? I want to impact leaders globally in their ability to show up for themselves and others, to be inclusive, to create the environments that we love, that we want to be in. There are some days where I think, what in the world? What am I, right? There are some days where it feels so heavy that I'm like, you can't possibly do this. And then there are other days where I think, stop looking at the long term, right? Don't look at the whole elephant, just one little bite. Today, what's the bite that you can take? So that is, you know, one of the things that I take from the quote. So mom said, yes, Murray, one person can inspire others. And I'm in a prime example. Yeah, mom is always like inspiring everyone. Let's see. Pat says, every little bit counts. The multiplier effect can never be discounted. On point, Murray. Absolutely. Right. And so I think that's what we have to remember. So as we dive into more inclusive leadership, what does this mean for me as a leader and building out that inclusive team? First, I want to know, for everyone out there watching, I would love to have you just type in the chat, what does inclusive leadership mean to you? Because I think one of the challenges, Lee, in getting there is that we all think about it differently. Right. I see this time and time again in my work with organizations when I ask people, well, what's authentic leadership? What's this leadership? And everyone has a different example. And I use it sometimes in workshops to illustrate a point. You're not going to all end up in the same place because you're all headed in a different direction. Right. So we have to come together and understand what is inclusive leadership, as a team, we all get behind that and then we can all row together, right? That's sort of the core of any movement forward in organizations and the work that I do. Lee, what does inclusive leadership mean to you?
To me, inclusive leadership means an active role in an intentional, having intention in making people feel included. And at the root of that, I think, is, you know, something that's something called psychological safety, right? Mm-hmm. That people feel safe to learn, to, you know, ultimately in a higher performing team, to be able to challenge the status quo or challenge questions or decisions that are being made. And it's, you know, it's that everybody is, can bring something to the table based on their unique experiences, essentially.
Yeah. I love that because psychological safety has to be at the core of that, right? If I'm going to feel included on this team, I might think a little bit differently. I might walk a little bit differently. I might speak a little bit differently. Am I still fully valued and recognized as having a place and a voice on this team? So so let's just do a quick round robin, Roz, because again, it's all different, right, for us. Roz, what does inclusive leadership mean to you?
I think for me, it's an unprecedented change. And, I'm going to give you an example. Coach Deion Sanders, unprecedented change. He went there in January, and in less than 9 months, the impact he has had, not only in UNAP, but globally, because he took the status quo and said, I'm not going that way. I'm going to go a whole nother way. And people are supporting him, whether it's on Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, whatever his social media is, whether he's winning or losing, I'm going back to that consistency. He's consistent. He's inclusive. When he came to Colorado, hey, I need to see more people brown and, you know, I need to see some other colors here. Mm-hmm. And he made sure of that, not only on his staffing, but also, you know, everywhere in the school. So his impact has, you know, even changed some of the way, some of the things that I do, because I read his quotes every day now. I follow him. That's the even though I'm not in Colorado. Yes, I bought a Colorado sweatshirt. That's the impact because his simple thing is, I believe. And just those two words, I believe. And so he's made an impact. And so that's what I think of. And I'm done speaking.
Thank you, Roz. Oh, see, now you got me going. I need a Colorado shirt too, because I am interested in the leadership clinic that he's putting on in Colorado, right? Forget about whether you like Deion or not, or he's flashy or what. Forget about that. Think about the leadership that he is showing and his impact, as Roz said, and how it's transforming, not just that team. It's transforming, and that ripple effect, Lee, that you mentioned earlier is definitely happening there in Colorado. So thank you for that, Roz, because now I need a jersey or a shirt for Colorado. But thanks for that. Mariah?
I think for me, it's more about, you know, recognizing, accepting, and integrating everyone, you know, a special gift, because like we mentioned before, we can't do it on our own. We bring, you know, one aspect or one, you know, we contribute, but we need other people's contribution to accept the diversity that they have, accept the, you know, the knowledge, the special knowledge that they have, things that we don't know as leader, that can come and complement, you know, whatever mission, you know, and vision we actually have, you know, for the team, for the country, for whatever, for the community, really integrated everybody, not judging, not, you know, respecting that and trying to use that to create something that can be integrated, that can have a bigger impact than our own, you know, our own gift.
Excellent, Murray. Thank you. Thank you for that. That integration. Mm-hmm. So what just came to mind as you were speaking is integration to impact. Somebody should coin that phrase. Like, I literally just thought about it, right? Integration to impact.
Impact, I think
it's huge. A couple of comments. So Pat says, for me, it's about being a leader, being aware of my own biases, and I'm able to consider other perspectives to inform decisions and collaborations. Love that, Pat. I think that's really, that's a great way to describe it. And Nate says, inclusive leadership is being sure everyone has a voice and is comfortable sharing it, right? So it can go from anything super complicated to really simple in terms of inclusive leadership. Why is it hard? Why is it hard, Lee? Yeah, I'm here for it.
I think, you know, two words, you know, as this was going around here come to mind. I think because it requires vulnerability on the part of a leader, right? Somebody mentioned being aware of my biases. That takes vulnerability and introspection to realize maybe what I've taught or what I believe is not, in fact, reality, right? Mm-hmm. The way I've been conditioned over my life as a you know, white cisgender, you know, heterosexual male, and authenticity, right? That's Deion Sanders. He's authentic. And as you said, consistent, Roz, he believes on who he is and he's not ashamed to go there and to just hold fast to it. So I think vulnerability has a lot to do with it. I think it's hard the way we've been conditioned in the US society. I want to be mindful that, you know, globally, you know, each place has, you know, their own cultures, and even within the United States. But, you know, we're conditioned to be, you know, perfectionists, right? To be high achievers, to not show, you know, weakness. And some people think vulnerability is a weakness, right? If we admit something that we don't know or that we're not as strong at. So I think to overcome that, we need to be vulnerable. And that takes some introspection and learning about ourselves. And quite honestly, on my journey, the more I become vulnerable, the easier things get. And that also kind of ripples too. If I show vulnerability, I see it reflected back in me. If I can show that, then other people feel more comfortable being vulnerable, as well. So that is another kind of ripple effect, that I see.
Yeah. So I love that. And vulnerability, I guess, is huge. So it reminds me of something that Brené Brown says. Brené Brown talks about the fact that she believes that humans are conditioned to avoid pain at all costs. Pain and discomfort, we will do anything not to have that. That level of vulnerability that you're speaking about can be super uncomfortable, right? It means, what if the things that I've thought for the past 20 years are wrong? Like, that feels terrible. It's, oh my goodness, you are challenging things at the very core of my being. Yeah, we're not going to do that. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and everybody else do your thing and I'll just dismiss that. And so we don't get there. So, Roz?
No, I was just, I feel like you just hit me with a rock because you said, I've been doing this, let's say, for 20 years and now I find out I've done it wrong. And then my thought is, so I've been doing it wrong. Did I hurt somebody in those 20 years? Did I misguide them? Did I mislead them? You know, that's what I'm thinking. Lord, what, you know, forgive me if I hurt anybody, please. You know, I hope I didn't bring any type of mental or, you know, social damage to anyone. But yeah, that's huge. You hit me with a rock with that one.
But it's also part of the journey as well, you know, and that's part of the learning process. And that's what I think inclusive leadership is all about. It's about being able to unlearn certain things, you know, learning when we make a mistake, being able to unlearn it and then start all over again and really bring something new.
Oh man, this is so good. This is so good. Lee, hold on for a minute. We got to do a couple things. I'm going to come back to that thought. So a couple things really quickly. So Pat said integration to impact, love it. And then also fully agree, Lee, showing vulnerability as viewed as weakness. It was viewed as weakness. And now I think it's a core skill for leaders. But Pat, we still don't know how to do it, right? We talk about it, but we don't know how to do it. So I'm going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to get to your thought, Lee. I can't believe how the time is flying already. This conversation is so good. Dare I say we might need a part two. We'll do that on the other side, and we'll talk about it on the other side of our commercial break.
Leaders today are faced with an exponentially evolving, dynamic workplace, but leadership is not a solo sport. It's critical to know who's on your team and to understand cutting-edge approaches to communication and influence. We invite you to experience the profound rewards of membership in Ascension Leaders, an above-the-grind community wherein today's leaders are empowered and inspired with unprecedented support to create modern magnetic cultures. Modern magnetic cultures, also known as MMCs, are the ideal performance and fulfillment culture prized by successful leaders and their teams. We urge you to carefully consider the edge our members gain from this extraordinary group. Choose to achieve the clarity, velocity, and momentum of a modern Ascension leader.
All right, and you can learn more about Ascension Leaders at AscensionLeader.com, AscensionLeader.com. It's an amazing, amazing group for leaders. Less than 2 cups of coffee a month. So people don't talk to me about money. So Lee, your thought, and then I want to continue this conversation.
Yeah, I want to just pick up on the being uncomfortable as a condition that we need to challenge ourselves. It brings to mind, you know, when we exercise, think of it as a muscle, right? We need to work on being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And it takes practice and it takes vulnerability to put ourselves out there. But the more we do it, the easier it becomes and the less uncomfortable it becomes. I'm not going to say it'll ever be comfortable, the less uncomfortable it becomes. So think of it as a muscle, right? When we exercise, we stress and tear our muscle fibers, and that's what enables us to grow, right? We feel the pain. We know we're going to feel the pain in the next day or two, the soreness. Or if you're a musician, I understand people that play guitar have to build up calluses on their fingers to be able to play the strings. So think of it as either exercise, building your muscles, or building your calluses to play an instrument, a guitar. That's the way we become a little bit more comfortable with being uncomfortable. And it means taking risks. It means making mistakes. We're going to make mistakes. We're human. So just understanding that it's okay. You're going to recover. As long as your intent is there, we can get through it. We can get through it. It's not as hard as people think. And look, I was there. It's taken me a while to get here. And I'm not saying that I'm at any end point in my journey. I'm still learning and continuing to grow, but it just gets a little bit easier as you gain more confidence in yourself.
Yeah, thank you for that, Lee. I love that. Mom said some of the most successful people are, and I think she's referring to getting uncomfortable and being comfortable with being uncomfortable. As we really think about this, it really does require us to create an intention. But I think one of the things that has to happen is we have to lose the judgment around it for ourselves and others. So if you are in a position where, you know, maybe you feel like you are being treated unfairly, if you're in an underrepresented group or anything like that, there's a lot of anger. Like, people are frustrated about this. Why are we still having this conversation in 2023? For the singular person that doesn't realize that maybe they've hurt someone over the past 20 years or that their actions were wrong, do we want them to feel pain about that past 20 years, or do we want them to just move forward, right? And that's a decision that we have to make, because if we don't release the judgment, not only of others, but of ourselves, we can't get past it. I'm not going to want to beat myself up all the time, and I feel awful, and now I was wrong, and I did this wrong, and oh my goodness. Well, who wants to go through that? But if we can learn to suspend judgment, with the goal of moving forward, right? Suspending judgment with the goal of moving forward, I think that's a much, much richer place for us to grow from, right? Because if I judge myself too much, I'm probably not going to want to engage in that activity. If I judge others too much, others are not going to want to engage in that activity, right? So I think there is definitely something, something to that. So I want to get, Mom also said, so a couple of things coming up. So we need to build that muscle of being uncomfortable. Absolutely, Pat, we have to. Right. And otherwise, talk is cheap. Like I said in my opening, those are just words. Authentic leadership and relatable leadership, all of those are just words if we don't learn how to do it. Right. So Mom said, afraid to show vulnerability. Yeah, it needs to be practiced and cultivated. Absolutely. And allowing people space to be where they are and to come forward with you. So I think that's something that is all of us can continue to work on. Lee, you said DEIB needs a shakeup. I want to show this on the screen and I want you to talk about your thoughts behind this because I thought this was brilliant. Love where you're coming from on this. So as I put this up, talk to us about what this means.
Yeah, so, you know, you think of the phrase, you know, I before E, except after C. You know, in my journey here, especially over the last couple of years, as I've gotten in more intensely into it, I think you need IMB before D and all viewed through E. And what that means is inclusion and belonging before diversity and all through a lens of equity. And the reason I think that is because, you know, especially after, you know, the George Floyd murder, there was a lot of performative work and words done, you know, by corporations and organizations where, you know, it's one-off training or hiring for diversity, you know, became, you know, the big thing. We got to do something. We got to, you know, our reports, our diversity reports have to show that we have a diverse culture. Well, you know, what I've learned from people in the community and in organizations is that, you know, you need to focus on inclusion and belonging as the foundation and psychological safety first, because you're not going to be able to recruit talent to a place that, you know, especially in today's world with social media and Glassdoor reviews, et cetera, especially the younger generation wants to be in a place that's inclusive. That is very important to the younger generations. And they are interviewing companies and organizations just as much as organizations are interviewing them. So if they don't have a sense that it's an inclusive environment, then they're not going to go work there, right? And you have to be also intentional about where are you going to, you know, bring people in. But people, you have to keep the people you have too, right? You have to keep people from historically marginalized groups within your company and have them speak highly that they feel included, because no, you know, my understanding from the communities I'm in, nobody wants to be the only or be hired as a token hire. Right. So right. You have to foster that culture, nurture that culture of inclusiveness that makes it a place where people feel comfortable going and being themselves, because otherwise they're not going to last. They're not going to stay. Like, why would you stay? Right. So that's what I mean. We need psychological safety as the foundation, inclusion and belonging, and then worry about the diversity part of it. Otherwise, you're probably going to do your company and your brand more harm than good. And it all has to be viewed through the lens of equity, giving people what they need to be successful, right? You know, certain people need different things based on the way they think. Are they able-bodied or not? You know, maybe they need mentorship because they haven't had that before. So, you know, being mindful of what's equitable and that everybody needs something that might be a little bit different. I think all those things need to happen before you really look at diversity.
Man, let me tell you something. I love this so much. So Roz, I saw you shaking your head. I'll come to you. And then Marae, I'll get your thoughts on this as well. I am B before D and all through E. Absolutely love it.
I love it. I don't know how you came up with that, but I took a picture of it and I'm going to use it at work.
Yes.
I am. And then, you know, particularly about the psychological safety, and I'm talking on a caregiver perspective. You know, I tell people, I said, when we drive up, our minds are already going into, you know, what do I have to do for work? And I was explaining to the gentleman that's over the building where we go in and provide services, I said, it's dark outside. It is pitch black. I said, this is a safety problem. And I said, psychologically, before I walk in, I'm scared. So I carry a flashlight at night to come in. I shouldn't have to carry a flashlight. You should make it to where I'm so comfortable to come in, I can do my work. See, that's where the inclusion comes. All of this comes in. I don't feel comfortable enough to come in to do my job.
Right.
And that's what that made me think of. But thank you so much.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. I'm so glad that you're going to use that, Rods, because I loved it. I thought that's genius. And I think it's something that needs to become pervasive in organizations. I'll tell a little bit of a story after, but Marae, well, let me get your thoughts on it first.
I mean, powerful thought, because, you know, I think we don't allow people to be, especially with this, this time where diversity, you know, is just taken for granted. A lot of companies are actually, you know, they're starting with something fake and they fake it, trying to make it. And it doesn't work like that because at the end, you crash. So it's important that they first let people be. And then, you know, really, you know, get the best of those people and the diversity will come. And that's the way I see, this quote. And it's really powerful. It is important that, you know, some of the company really step back and really understand they have to make sure that, you know, whoever they hire, whoever they want to have in their organization can be themselves. And then, you know, they can build on that and it can be very powerful. And that's the way it's going to be very sustainable. And I'm talking from, you know, working in a male dominated environment where from the beginning for women, it's difficult to be, you know, to really be, to lead as, you know, as women, because we're not allowed to do that. And we're stuck in the system. So it's important that we allow, you know, women to lead, have this, you know, feminine leadership, because it can bring so much in terms of diversity in leadership. So that's really, you know, what I wanted to, you know, add to the conversation.
Yeah,
and that example that Roz gave is it's so simple, right? Better lighting. But if I, as a white guy, have never felt that as a threat, right? Because I'm not a woman fearing for my safety, because I'm of a dominant group in our culture, I don't think of that if I'm the building manager, right? And so that's all part of that being intentional about asking people for what they need. And I just wanted, you know, the caregiver aspect of it too, that you mentioned, Roz, because I've recently had to be a caregiver for my wife who's going through her second round of cancer. And somebody mentioned the other day, actually another Black woman engineer, I'd love to connect you with her, Marae. Michelle Hayward does work in this space too for female engineers and STEM. But, you know, she mentioned about, there was a discussion about ERGs and having an ERG for caregivers. That makes total sense. That's part of what we bring to work. And we can't separate people that say, oh, you know, you can't bring your whole selves to work or don't bring your personal life to work. How can you not?
Exactly. Right?
We're human beings. And we also bring work to our homes.
Right.
So it's not a realistic expectation to keep those two things separate.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. Christopher said, nailed it. I think we were talking about the DEIB. I think it's so important. This is a really important conversation because that psychological safety piece is huge. But I think one of the challenges is we are doing a lot of assuming and not a lot of asking. Mm-hmm. And there's two elements to this. Even if you ask, if I don't feel safe telling, you're still not going to get good information, right? So you've got to create the space. So the story I was going to share is I got a phone call from, or not a phone call, someone reached out, I can't remember, on LinkedIn or somehow they found me and said, you know, hey, we're a tech company and we are growing and we're not very diverse. And we recognize that. And so, but we don't really know even where to start and how to do hire other people that we want to bring into the mix of our company. And so I end up saying, okay, time out. I got a whole lot of questions because I'm not just going to give you, oh, here's where you go higher. I had questions about what have you done to prepare your workspace for this, right? What conversations have you had with your team? What does that look like? Are you just looking to add numbers? Or I had a lot of questions because you don't want to put someone in an environment where you have, so it's like planting seeds or flowers in soil that has not been prepared, right? Mm-hmm. And then you expect for it to work. Well, and then you say, well, we tried it and it didn't work, right? So it's all a terrible, vicious cycle if we're not really, really careful about how we do this. So I just wanted to put that piece out there. We got to do the work. We've got to do the work, right? Mm-hmm. To be prepared for this. So
What does that work mean to you? Because this is something that I'm keying in on, like doing the work. And for some people, you know, especially white guys, is, you know, I didn't understand really what doing the work meant. Mm-hmm. And I do have a better sense of it now.
Yeah, I think so. There's two levels, I think, to doing the work. There's the individual work and there's the organizational level work, right? And almost everything I coach organizations on is at two levels. Emotional intelligence, I don't care what it is. There's always two levels, individually and organizationally. At the individual level, I've got to be willing to be vulnerable, to look, to be. One of the best practices is reflection, right? Mm-hmm. On who you are, how you're showing up, how others are responding to you, what went well, what didn't go well, all of that, right? So I think doing the work on that individual level, but also having broader conversations with the organization, setting a clear goal and intention, setting vulnerable spaces and times for us to open up, to share why are we hesitant, mm-hmm. or what causes us fear and anxiety around this, right? And then setting some clear goals and where we want to get to and what that looks like. And then it's being accountable, right? It's having accountability systems, processes, metrics in place to make sure that we are headed in the right direction. Not it's a punitive thing, but when we're not, we can get ourselves back on track by saying, hey, we said this was where we were going. Here's where we are. Let's talk about what are the obstacles and challenges and barriers that we have to continuing to make progress. So when I think of doing the work, that's what I think of. Mm-hmm.
And why is it important, right? Why do you as an individual or an organization feel it's important to be inclusive and have an inclusive environment?
Yeah,
absolutely. You have to have your why, and you have to be, I think, grounded in it, and you have to feel it's important, and you have to have the intention to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a cultural transformation that really, to me, needs to be in the mission and vision strategy, you know, of organizations. It's a journey. It's not a one-off training. You know, I come from the IT world. You wouldn't buy this SAP software package that I used to install and just, you know, plug it in and hope that it's going to work, right? You'll initially have a go live, and then you're still not going to be using all the functionality. It's a journey that takes place, and it's a shift. It's a cultural mindset.
Yeah.
I often say to people, it's not rocket science. In some ways, it's harder because we're not dealing with the laws of physics or anything like that. We're dealing with people and social change and cultural change, and it takes a lot of effort and consistency and commitment.
Absolutely. Roz?
I'm going to say also, too, In corporate world or wherever, when someone gets hired, this should be a part of the employee orientation. It's got to be. It's got to be. You can't wait. Well, you shouldn't wait 10 years later. And now let's talk about inclusion because we got a problem at work. Mm-hmm. Let's try to start at the, not try. It should be a mandate to start when they first come to work. A mandate. And then every month, there should be trainings on it every month. Just like you go and get your oil change every, we need to maintenance. We need to have this continual training and maintenance on our employees or stakeholders, whatever you want to call them, every month. Every month I have to update my care plans for the people I'm taking care of because they're not the same today as they were 30 days ago. Yeah, something has changed.
Yep. Continuous improvement. Yep. Yes. Continuous improvement. And it has to be embedded.
So when I work with an organization who is wanting a one-off training, it tells me something, right? Because as I said before, telling doesn't teach, right? Teaching is through repetition and practice and reinforcement. That's how we integrate learning. So I didn't tell you something all day. I say this all the time. We know a lot of stuff. Knowing is not the thing. Knowing does nothing if we don't integrate it into who we are and what we do. One of my favorite quotes is, it doesn't matter what you know if it doesn't influence what you do, right? You can know all day long, but what are you doing with what you know, right? So love that. So Christopher said, there's endless pressure on the best of us to compensate for the worst of us. We need evolution, not just a growth spurt. And he says, agreed, absolutely. So gosh, we're getting time to close to end. And I know Lee's got some things that he wants to make sure that he's off of here for. So we need to start our wrap up process. We didn't even get to our top two, which was going to be a good one. I'll save it for next week, the top two, so that we can make sure that we wrap up properly. But we need to take our coffee shots. All right, got it. Thank you kindly. So, wow, what a fast, energizing hour. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. So we're going to move into our closing segment of What's in Your Cup. So when we come back, what we want to know from you is, what did we put in your cup today? What did we fill your cup with that you want to take away, that you want to ponder, you want to reflect, you want to act on, that you got from this conversation? So we'll come back and do a round robin and wrap up right after this. All right, we'll start with you, Mireille. What's in your cup?
Oh, my head is spinning. There's been so much, you know, said today. But really, you know, what I have in my cup is, we as individuals need to do the work. The work needs to be done, and really start with the inclusion as well, the inclusion part for organization, to make sure that, you know, they create the, you know, the space for this inclusion to happen. And then we can talk about diversity after that. So those are the key thing, you know, in many that I can, you know, mention, but there's definitely more.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mireille. Roz?
Two things. When Lee talked about the pebble that dripped in the water and the ripples go out and it comes back, mm-hmm. that was one. And the second one was integration to impact. Those are my takeaways. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good stuff. Really good stuff. So, Lee, what do you hope people take away from this conversation today? And then as you wrap up, how can they connect with you to just connect and learn more about what you're doing?
Sure. Yeah. You know, and I could talk about this all day. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. you know, I did something called a White Men's Caucus. And at the end of it, somebody was interviewing me and she said, you know, this doesn't sound like something. This isn't what you do. This is who you are. And that was kind of a moment for me that was like, wow, yeah, I think you're right. And I'm still, you know, at 53, I'm still getting comfortable with like who I am, you know, and what I, you know, whatever I can offer. But I hope and optimism, I guess, is what, you know, I hope people take away from this. I'll use another quote from a book, Colin McCann, called Transatlantic. I liked his other book better, about the great world spin. But a quote in the book said, cynicism is easy. An optimist is a braver cynic. Mm. And that just really sit with me, right? It's easy to just say, oh, things are never going to get better, or the world is on fire and whatever. But, you know, we can control. The only thing we can control is how we react to things. And so I hope, you know, people take away that hope and optimism that we can, each of us can try and make a difference.
Awesome.
And people can connect with me on LinkedIn is probably the easiest way.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thank you so much. I have loved this conversation. It's been really, really great. Christopher said, the four of you have really done a marvelous job today. Thank you so much, Christopher. We sure appreciate it and appreciate all of you for tuning in. For my last drop today, inclusive leadership is not just the latest buzzword. It is the heartbeat of a trust-filled, high-performance culture. You want to improve your bottom line. You want to improve your productivity. You want to get more. You want your people to want to be there. Then inclusive leadership is one important part of the puzzle to make that happen. So for my co-host and my guest, stay tuned for just a minute. For everyone out there, thank you so much for tuning in. Always great to be here with you on another episode. Tune in next week, same time, same station, for another episode of The Coffee with Rhonda Show. Until then, everybody, take good care.